This is the Stick and Hack Show. Conversation, discussion, debate, and golf talk from a stick, Mike Ryan, and the hack, Adam Grubb. Boys, you are up.
All right, everybody. Welcome in to the Stick and Hack program. I'm your host, Adam Grubb, the hack. That's Mike Ryan, the stick. Mike, hello.
Good day, sir.
Good day to you. Middle of May here. We're still trying to finagle our way through everything that's happening. But the good news is that the Stick and Hack Show hasn't missed a beat. We have not missed a beat. And that's the way it should be, right?
That's right. It's been fairly smooth.
Yeah.
We've had a little misstep here and there, but you know.
That's fine. Where other shows are scrambling. Did you see the story about the news anchor that wasn't wearing pants?
I did see that.
Yeah. So we've got.
That was incredible.
At least that's not us, you know.
Small fact. I have no pants on right now.
Okay. That is a small fact.
Joking,
if you know what I mean. Yep. Episode 23 here, the Stick and Hack Show, the most sophisticated golf show in the free world, from the greatest golf club in the world without the course. We got a great show today. Guest this week is Dr. David Pierce. He is a sports, what innovation? I mean, is that sports innovation? That sounds like a very, very specific title.
So I'm the director of the Sports Innovation Institute at IUPUI in downtown Indianapolis.
All right. Well, we are excited to talk to you because this is a time where sports are trying their best to innovate, trying to figure out what's next, and it's going to be a remarkable conversation, and we're excited to talk to you. Dr. David Pierce is the guest here on the show, and he's coming up in just a little bit. First up, though, Mike, we have an upset PGA player. Now, I had to do a little research here because, first of all, I didn't know this guy was a PGA player. The tour is scheduled to resume the Charles Schwab Challenge, June 11th through the 14th in Fort Worth, Texas. Okay, it's gonna be held without fans, and the tour recently told Golf.com that they were going to be exploring the social distancing guidelines for its return. Some of the proposed tweaks. Are you ready for this? Now, this falls right in line with golf across America right now.
Right.
When it comes to rules and regulations in order to continue to play golf. Yep. So possibility tweaks in the PGA Tour, no rakes in the sand traps. Golfers are going to have to pull their own clubs to limit contact with caddies, which I can't even imagine what that's like. And players are forced to putt with the flag stick in.
Yep.
Now, this doesn't, first of all, let's just back up. Does any of that sound outlandish to you?
To me, no. I think those are all very reasonable ideas, and they are going to have to do something like that to mitigate the spread of any disease, any of that type of thing. It is what it is.
It's not a problem.
No,
it's not a problem.
No.
One pro, 32-year-old Adam Hadwin,
yep,
thinks it's a problem. So last month, the end of April, he said that this could be a deal breaker for him. Now, Adam Hadwin sounds like my accountant's name. You know, honest to God, I did not know he was a golfer. And I'm not trying to be offensive or trying to be funny. I did not know who he was until this moment. So he's 32 years old, Adam Hadwin. And this is what he said in an interview. He said, "Are we not going to be allowed to touch pins or flags? I putt with the flag out. So if we all of a sudden are going to be forced to putt with it in to not touch a flag, I'm going to have issues with that. And that might make me honestly rethink playing because it changes everything." Yeah. Adam Hadwin has had enough. He is putting, his foot down. And he is saying, "Hell no, not on my watch."
Yeah, I think it is. I read the article, and my immediate reaction was, "Get over it. You'll be fine. It's not that big a deal." I think one of the quotes he made was, "I don't think guys are going to put their livelihood in jeopardy by having to putt with the stick in," which to me is like the most out of touch statement I've ever heard in my life.
That's the most out of touch statement typically at any point in the world in time, but specifically now with everybody who really are fighting for their livelihoods in the front lines of this pandemic. And Adam Hadwin is frustrated because he's going to have to putt with the flag in.
Yeah. It's pretty ridiculous. There were some other items in there. They discussed in that interview around, possibly, you know, caddies when you're talking about them not pulling the clubs, they're talking about just not having caddies at all. And I think they acted like that was, oh, that's just what, like carry our own bags. Like
absolutely not.
Yeah, absolutely not. It's just like, come on, man.
Hey, you, but to be fair, you think Tiger doesn't play very much now. Wait until those rules come out.
Hey man, I personally, I think it would be incredible.
Oh, I do too.
Pros carry their bag, have a carry bag out there. And have to club themselves, have to do a little math once in a while. I mean, I think that would be fantastic.
I think it would be what we typically have on our weekend with golf. This is what we would have on TV. Nobody watching.
Yeah.
Guys carrying their own bags, schlepping up their own bags. No galleries, no ropes.
Yep.
Dudes playing golf.
Yeah, I think it would be. I think
except for Adam Hadwin.
Yeah, I think for the PGA, I think for the PGA, it's a. It's a perfect way to make their players more relatable to people. If you've got them out there and they don't have caddies and they're carrying the bag themselves and they're clubbing themselves and you know they're playing the same way you and I do on the weekend, can't touch the flag, don't have any rakes, that type of thing. To me, I think that's a great way for them. And they're already doing it. Obviously, they're going to be playing the they're resuming the season. But I just think those are like small things that they can do that just make the game more relatable to the everyday player.
And not only that, but imagine if it was reversed, Mike, and they said, hey, we're not going to be – everyone's clamoring for golf right now. Yeah. Everyone wants that on TV. But if the PGA came out or the LPGA came out and they said, hey, we're not going to start the season until we can take the flag out or move a rake out of a bunker, people would lose their minds. Right. And they would call that out of touch. So the only real annoyance here of this entire thing, because we're 100% online, is Adam Hadwin.
Yeah.
And if this was maybe literally anybody else, I might have been like, huh, yeah, I guess that is kind of annoying. Adam Hadwin? No interest.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to hear from many. I don't think you're going to hear from Mr. Hadwin very
good. From now on. So
I think the PGA, I would be shocked if he didn't get a call for the PGA. They were like, just shut up.
Yeah. Hey, hey, Hadwin, didn't realize you were even signed up for the tournament. Number one, number two, we don't want you to come to the tournament. And number three, please put your PGA card at the front door. So today's show dedicated to that.
Incredible.
all right. And so this takes us to our conversation, Mike, which is the innovation of the game. And in chaos comes change. That's what we're hearing over and over again without question. Every time something happens in the world that is of any magnitude, a change comes out of that. And the changes we're going to see in the game, changes we're going to see in sports, changes we're going to see in our day-to-day lives are inevitable. And one of those changes is perhaps that some of these things we realize, okay, that was a little hokey. We didn't need to even do some of these things in golf. We can play the game and enjoy the game without those things. And somebody who is 100% involved with all sports innovation, and if it's innovation in sports, it's this guy's doing, is Dr. David Pierce.
That's right.
Welcome to the Stick and Hack Show, David.
Thanks, guys.
So is that true? Are you responsible for all innovation in sports over the last 100 years?
I would say that's quite the compliment. I'm getting a lot of credit there that I don't think I deserve.
Well, for this show, we throw all facts out the window. So
consider yourself lucky, David, because he never gives me any credit for anything. So,
all right. So I want to read your bio here. I don't normally do this on the show because we just like to move things along, but I'm going to read it because it is impressive, A, but B, it kind of gets into what it is that you do, because when you look at a director of Sports Innovation Institute, what does that mean? So you work with students and professors to help understand and solve challenges in the sports industry using human-centered design, which we'll talk about in a second. You are passionate about preparing the next generation of sports business professionals to be creative and innovative. And you've authored textbook, the only textbook devoted to teaching students how to sell in the sports industry. So your curriculum and your life is centered around sports, but it's centered around some really cool areas around sports, which is the innovation and the challenges that sports has today, which it doesn't on the outside. We all know that sports have many, many challenges and many we probably don't even know. And you're helping students teach, or you're teaching students how to sell in the sports space, which is something that I could talk hours about, just to, you know, about the NASCAR sponsorships and how do these things even happen and what is the reason behind it. But we're going to focus first with you on the term innovation in sports. What does that mean to you? And what do you see as moving forward, true innovation in the sporting world? And can it even happen?
Yeah, I mean, at the most basic level, right, it's you know, changing things for the better. And that's really kind of my why I continue to work in higher education as a professor, frankly. I don't want to spend my career just, you know, teaching some content out of a textbook and then, you know, just be training people to do the same old job over and over again. I mean, I've invested a lot of time and energy into understanding the kind of the design thinking process and how that can help students better understand and frame problems and then ultimately innovate creative solutions. So innovation is so much more than just, you know, let's just say the new gadget or gadget that's technology. I mean, it's really understanding people. So people are really at the center of it, and you know, understanding their needs and their wants and their pain points, and then figuring out sometimes with technology, but you know, sometimes just with a good idea, how to make people's lives in sport better. And that can be that could be from golfers to the golf course owners to the a lot of stuff recently with sports officials. I mean, there's so many different users or people that are at the center of sport. So that's kind of like at a really high level what we do. But I'm looking forward to a future semester here, hopefully coming up here in the fall, where we get to actually work with some golf course owners and really look at the golf experience and understand, what's holding people back from participating more in golf and understanding what people value about it and how can that on golf course experience be tweaked or altered so that it fits in people's lives. So it really starts with understanding, like, how does the sport and the activity really fit into someone's life? And then there was another thing you said earlier that I thought was really awesome, which was what are these kind of silly things that we've been, you know, doing, or that's just always been the way it's been that we can now rethink? And even just putting the ball into the hole, right? I mean, I've only had a chance to play two rounds so far with the
foam
setup, where whatever they're calling it, where it doesn't actually go in the hole. So, like, if we can go out and have fun with golf, we don't actually have to put the ball in the hole. That brings up all kinds of things, like, why is it 9 holes? Why is it 18 holes? Fundamentally, those are just things that are so entrenched in golf that, you know, maybe it doesn't actually have to be that way.
Yeah. Mike and I talk about this all the time, on the show, but also offline sometimes, when we are together, which is few and far between, as you can possibly imagine. But we talk about why are things the way that they are in golf, and it's the establishment. It's just the way things have always been. And it's run typically by a generation that doesn't like change. And so your job and your day-to-day is to look at those trends, look at the ways that things happen and why things move and when they should move. And I agree with you. And I've been playing golf without putting the ball in the hole for years.
Yeah. Maybe we already knew that, actually.
Right? Yeah. Actually, not even new to me. I didn't even realize there was foam in the holes for like 7 holes. And then I saw it. But you're right. This could change the way that we watch and we play golf. Do you look at innovation as what happens with technology of the sport or things that happen within a sport to help it grow? What is your definition of true innovation in sport?
I think it's definitely both. I would say my personal interest is kind of on the second side of things, and how do you grow? So a lot of the problem spaces that we've worked in have to do with recruitment and retention, right? So some semesters, we'll look at, volunteers that, volunteer at sporting events. And other semesters, we've worked at people that are sports officials. I mean, there's a huge national shortage of sports officials out there across all states and all sports, and no one is really stepping up to try to solve the problem. A lot of governing bodies just kind of, the business as usual. But when you actually go, what I have the students do, and I obviously coordinate all this as the professor, but we're out there doing observation. We interviewed over 50 officials in all kinds of different sports, and really all it takes is going, and this sounds simple. I mean, there's some methods that go behind it, but you're really just out talking to people, right? To understand like, hey, this person officiated for 4 years and they quit after 4 years, right? Why? Right. And it sounds simple. There's some, some methodology stuff that goes behind it. But ultimately, with any innovation, it really needs to start with the user or the stakeholder, the fan, the customer, the volunteer, the referee really is at the centerpiece. There's just a lot of problem solving happens in boardrooms of governing bodies and organizations where everybody walks into that room thinking that they're the expert, right? And you've kind of got that. You guys have all been in those traditional brainstorming sessions, right? Where everyone's just going to kind of throw an idea at the wall, and there's a lot of random, scattered, unstructured conversation. And then there's some dude with a title that's going to make a decision.
Right.
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 Yeah.
But what design thinking really allows everybody to do is kind of go through a different process, which is starting with the user, understanding their values, their needs, and their pain points. And then it brings in a much more structured problem framing and ideation process so that you're really asking kind of those inspiring questions that, really are fundamental to, advance your organization, advance your business, create a better experience for your user. And then that's where the really big and bold ideas come from. And I've just been so excited. I mean, I just kind of took a leap of faith with it about 3 years ago. And I've just been so impressed with the ability of just my college students at IUPUI in the Midwest in Indianapolis, and their ability to think much more boldly and much more creatively than solutions that are being delivered by people that work in industry. So, golf is a fertile ground for this. This is what I wanted to start with because this is my personal passion area, but I am stoked to dig into golf in the fall, assuming, there's, everything going on that's feasible.
Right.
So,
right.
Yep. Right. Yeah. So, I mean, just think about, I just read an article, like a good example of, user-centered design in golf right now. There's a, and I'm probably going to mess up the company. I'm going to say, is it Bag Boy? I might mess up the brand, but there's a new, golf bag that now is like an immediate pop-up when you pull it out of your trunk, and it's an immediate close down when you try to close it back down. But their parent company had made like the best baby stroller on the market, and you can kind of picture those pop-up being down.
Yeah.
Right. So that's a classic example of user-centered design. So it's like, I'm going to, go watch a 70-year-old man go to his trunk and get into a battle royale with his push cart, right? And see, and think, okay, well, how can we make this experience better for that golfer, right? So I just was just reading an article about that. I was like, that's a classic example of how human-centered design, there's not necessarily, there's some technology that's involved with that to like, make the parts work right, but really it's about trying to make that person's life and experience better.
That's awesome. I love that. I love that approach, because so often you get stuck. I think people that are really close to, I would say, like the leadership within many sports, they have an idea, a preconceived idea in their mind of something. And I think if you get out there and you're just observing people and starting there, I think that's where you really are able to make some changes and make suggestions that really make sense long term. But you talked a little bit earlier about kind of your background a little bit, but tell us about your history in sports and what about that history made you gravitate towards this field?
Yeah, so I went to Indiana University in Bloomington to get my undergrad degree. I really wanted to be a play-by-play radio broadcaster. That I wanted to be, if you're from the Midwest and you know Don Fisher, like that was totally who I wanted to be. And newsflash, he's still the guy calling the game. Don't come up very often.
Yeah, that's right.
But maybe I should broaden my perspective here. So I went more of the sport business and sport management route. I actually worked for the Indiana University football team for 4 years. I was the video guy filming in the end zone of Memorial Stadium for practices and games. And actually what happened was there was a coaching change right before my senior year. And Cam Cameron was the coach. He got fired.
Yep.
And then they brought in a new coach who, and I didn't realize it. It was just like when they clean house, like they clean house, right? Like, even people that really have nothing to do with wins and losses on the field, they also were let go, like the video director that I worked for. And I was like, you know what? I don't know that I really want a job that is going to be tied to wins. And I thought it'd be really cool to work for a team, right? And that was fun kind of in college. But I'm like, that's not how I'm going to make my career and make my money. So I, you know, ultimately kind of pursued the academic route and, you know, got my doctoral degree and really found that I had a passion for teaching and trying to get students to think different. And then the only other thing I would say on that would be like on the sales side of thing, that's where, you know, about 36% of the jobs in our industry are in sales. And in classic higher education fashion, like nobody was teaching students how to do it. And I just couldn't wrap my brain around that. So even though I didn't necessarily come from a sales background, I mean, I spent the first 8 years of my career was really dedicated to figuring out how to do that and do it well and give students the experience that they needed to be successful and actually get those jobs and then succeed in the jobs when they got there. So that's kind of been my passion point. It was like, here's a job that exists. Let's train people to do it and do it well, get them placed. And then once I kind of had a handle on that, it's like, let's just not, you know, do the same classes the same way over and over again. Well, I bring that same mindset to my job in higher ed as well. And then talk about an industry that doesn't change. I mean, higher ed is another one.
Right. So, for sure.
I think a story that you could probably relate to is on the sales side. And I found this out a couple years ago in the IndyCar, NASCAR, and the sponsorships, right? And I always wonder why would somebody spend hundreds of thousands of dollars for their decal, their little decal, on a car going 200 miles an hour. And so I was talking to Sarah Fisher. I had an opportunity to spend some time with her, and I was talking to her about the sponsorship, which is probably weird for her because everyone wants to talk about racing and talk about female driver and racing and a race team and Indy 500 and this whole thing. And I'm like, yeah, so tell me about the sponsorships. And she's like, are you interested? I'm like, no, but I would like to know how that works. And she said that one of the reasons that those smaller companies sponsor the cars and sponsor different teams is not for their decal and their logo to be seen by a fan in the stands, but it's for access to the other sponsors within that group. It's for access to the bigger sponsors so that they can have a guaranteed meeting and an introduction and their business can move forward because they are now associated with Coca-Cola or associated with Budweiser or some of those bigger brands. That's why the smaller brands get in there. And I found that fascinating that somebody would use that as a lead generator and a guaranteed automatic meeting. But that is how that world works. Is it the same in the PGA, do you think? Is it the same in the LPGA and golf that these sponsors sponsor certain holes or certain things throughout the weekend specifically? I guess they don't sponsor holes. It's not a weekend car.
Maybe they should be.
I think access and connection with others, that kind of that like B2B business to business networking piece. Yeah. I know, like in particular, you know, I've heard, VPs of marketing and sponsorship for IndyCar teams talk about that that's one of their lead-ins, really. But I think would be similar, really, in all sports. But I mean, the golf would not be any different there.
Right.
That's a good point. It's those kind of that connection and that network.
Right. Yeah. You don't think of it that way. All right. So we've had some time off here over the last couple months of sports, and started around the middle of March. So about 60 to 75 days here of no sports professionally. And in most cases, in any type for gambling, for the leagues, you name a league, unless it's horse racing or perhaps No, I think horse racing is the only thing that, that was back in action.
I think Major League Fishing's been going.
Oh, yeah, you're right. My apologies to all our Major League Fishing fans out there. That's typically something I have my thumb on the pulse of. I don't know how that got past me. But do you feel that the major sports leagues have used this time of silence in the sports world to really think about how they innovate and change and the future of engagement with their sports? Because some people, David, have said, you know what, I realize I don't really need to watch sports on the weekend. I don't really need that. Now, some guys and people are like, now, absolutely, I need that back. But some are like, you know what, that was just something I did. I don't really care anymore. Do you think that those guys are in the leagues are looking at this as a true change in the way that they go to market moving forward?
Some leagues have been more proactive than others on what I would just call thinking about the kind of the in-home viewing experience. And until we have games that come on again, we're not going to know what that's going to look like. But ultimately, I mean, if there's three big revenue streams for all these leagues, if it's, you know, it's TV, it's sponsorship, and then it's tickets and other game day revenues, the key thing everybody is trying to do is, even if you have to sacrifice the ticket revenue, it's like you still want to get the stuff and the competitions aired, right? And so then that is going to demand some sort of new, improved, different, enhanced in-home viewing experience that, you know, uses a mix of all these tools that are out there that kind of have been looked at as kind of, I guess, you know, little luxury toys, but may become more integral to the experience, from augmented reality to virtual reality, and kind of your point of view experience. And ultimately, if there's fewer fans, there should be more access to get in to places that you typically have not been a part of as a fan. So I don't know. You know, I saw your article on, and it's funny because I was thinking about it, but I saw your article that you wrote a couple of days ago about the PGA Tour and kind of the in-home viewing experience and what that might look like. So you've got, you know, like, why aren't we seeing Ricky Fowler play Jordan Spieth on an E? I mean, that's a great question. Like, why aren't we other? That's more of your short-term stopgap, like while literally nothing is going on. But I think even as we get back to a full sports calendar and there's still some more social distancing, I mean, sports is very, and tourism is very clearly in the kind of that third phase of rolling out. It's just going to be super important for a different in-home viewing experience to exist. Now, the PGA Tour has been pretty proactive in previous years on kind of their media side and trying to deliver some of that stuff. So I hope that spirit of trying to be, you know, ahead of the curve there will continue.
Well, if your definition of ahead of the curve is replaying Masters from 10 years ago, then yeah, the PGA is killing it.
Well, they tried to do a little bit on the, yeah, maybe it hasn't been that great.
No, it's been terrible. It has been terrible. I honestly, I don't want to turn this into a thing here in a debate. But when you look at even the IRL and the Indy Racing League, they were able to at least get something for the drivers to do. The MLB is doing the show, playing the show, the PlayStation game, the show. Now, as ridiculous as that sounds to watch and care about professional athletes playing a video game, at least their brand was in front of people. The PGA's brand has not been in front of people at all. Yeah. And I think that was probably the biggest miss for them, was that, because they were the one sport that could do their sport in a virtual environment and still have activity and still watching people swing and hit a ball and the data and the analytics and all the stuff that could happen. The only difference would be it's not on a real course. I don't know why I'm so upset. I apologize. It's not your fault, David. I'm not mad at you. I need you to know that. I'm not upset with you. I just find it extremely challenging to think that in a sport that needs to change and needs transformation, that at the one point in the entire existence that they could have said, you know what, we're going to stand up and we're going to be the first ones to make this change. They said, nah, we're just going to wait till June. And then we're going to replay an old Houston Open.
Yeah. Well, it's almost like if you're not going to innovate around it now, when are you? Right.
Yeah. And
that's kind of the scenario that you're left with.
Mike, can you ask a question? Because I'm starting to have heart palpitations here.
I will. So speaking of that, and talking about innovation in golf, what would you say, as the game stands now, today, has been the biggest innovation in golf that has really transformed the game, in your opinion?
So, yeah, a lot of different ways to look at that. I'm going to maybe just look at it from our current context. I think there's a couple of things that are going on that could be really good for golf. And then a technology that maybe in the grand scheme of things, like, isn't really that big of a deal, but I think is here at the right time. So if we think about this idea that golf, and again, this is not in every state, and so I understand that, but where I live in Indiana, it is an essential activity. It's outdoors, it's recreation, it's on par with going to a state park and hiking, right? Some modifications have been made to do it, you know, safely. So that's a big deal in terms, I think, in terms of just people's perception of what golf is.
Yep.
And what it means in people's lives to be able to get out and do that. So we don't need to go into all the negative preconceived notions that people have of golf or golfers that don't golf. Yep. And I also even think for people like myself that, you know, do golf, you know, whatever, 20 times a year, it does make me think about that. I'm just much more appreciative of that time and the benefit that I'm getting out of it. And in particular, the two rounds that I played, it was, you know, that county health department had decided it was walking only. Yeah. Right. And so there wasn't a sound on that golf course.
Yeah.
There was like 15 people playing. There wasn't the clatter of the carts being parked and moved and stopping and starting. It was the most awesome 3 hours and 45 minutes that I spent doing anything in a really long time. So I think there's a couple of things. So you've got this, it's an essential recreational activity. And then it's also this really, really healthy thing to go do. And I've often thought that golf is missing the boat on really promoting the health benefits behind golfing, particularly if you're, now this is assuming that you're walking, but in this time where a lot of places aren't even allowing you to take a cart, I think there needs to be some repositioning and some doubling down in the golf industry at large, which is tough to do because there's so many stakeholders. And I know there's a lot of reasons why that is hard to do. Mm-hmm. So ultimately then to get to your answer, setting up the context then is these different, ways that you can transport your bag around while still getting to walk the course, I just think are really, really at the right place at the right time, right? So I get my 4.5 mile walk in, I'm being healthy, right? It's repositioning what golf is in people's mind, but I don't have to strap the thing on my back. Like, this is a win-win all around. So like our, you know, the little remote control or Bluetooth controlled, you know, kind of pull carts, like, are they ultimately like the biggest thing ever in golf? No, but I think like right now, golf has an opportunity to just really be perceived differently in society as a whole, where, you know, you're not the, I mean, we just don't need to go into all the negative stereotypes, right? Like we know what those are. So that's one, like currently right now, as I was, you know, kind of, my mind is just so different now. Like when I go on a golf course, like I'm the design thinker, right? Like I'm watching people interact with the staff and the course. And it's like, I saw all these people out there that probably wouldn't have normally been using the cart that way, having a great time. It's like, there is so much power in that I think coming out of this, like if golf courses can figure out a way to harness that, I think you're going to attract and retain golfers at a higher level. And I know we get into the whole conversation too of like, well, there's all these people that are playing at Topgolf, like how do we get those same people, you know, to come out to the court? I think like what I just talked about is a significant part of that. But then to your question earlier, Adam, like, well, who's responsible? That's where it gets murky because you've got, you know, different, you know, all the alphabet soups aren't necessarily singing from the same hymnal, right? And then golf course operators are competing against each other. They don't really collaborate to.
There's no unity. There's no unity, right?
There's
no unity and change.
Pieces that kind of get in the way, but so I don't know. That's kind of how I thought. You asked that earlier. I think that's kind of what I came up with.
Yeah, no, it's great. So, and you know, I think we want to have you back. I don't think I know. And if you'll come back to the Stick and Axe show, because there's so many other things there to unpack with first stellar appearance of yours, sir. that we could talk to you more and more and almost have a series of just the different ways that golf changes. And the design thinking is something that most people don't even think about.
So just think about the whole designs, right? Like one of the reasons why we don't walk is because it's so difficult to walk some of these courses. So like the future or the modifications that are going to come to golf courses, like if we just would make it easier for people to do that and not discourage them from doing that, I think we would be surprised at how many people would want to engage with it. But that's really where design, no one's really studied that. Like that's where the power of design thinking really comes in to say, hey, should there be a shift in the industry to do that? But I would love to come back and unpack this.
Yeah, that's great. Dr. David Pierce, from the Director of Sports Innovation Institute at IUPUI, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much for being on the Stick and Hack Show. And go out and get that third round in if you can here soon. Okay, sir?
Thanks, guys. Keep up the good work.
All right, appreciate it very much. There you go, everybody. Dr. David Pierce, guest on the Stick and Hack Show. We're going to have him back, Mike. There's no doubt about that because that.
There's
so much there.
Yeah, there's a lot there. There's a lot of things that I've started thinking about myself just around golf in general and how what are the things that are going to change in just society due to this whole pandemic and how work will change for people. How much more is remote working going to be prevalent? And the idea
how many people are going to can't wait to get back to work and be like, oh, I love working in the office. Remember when I was complaining that Carol was bothering me? Carol no longer bothers me.
Well, I think it's going to go the other direction, to be honest. I mean, it's always been this thing that they're saying that, remote working will never kind of become the prevalent, mode. I think you're going to see out of this that it's going to accelerate that a little bit because I think you're going to see that companies are able to see that they may not need all of the real estate that they once needed.
I disagree.
It's a big expense.
I disagree only all because you think of all the people that are now working from the home that have never done that. And they go, what the hell is happening? Every 5 seconds, somebody is needing something.
The kids aren't always going to be there. That's part of this that you got to remember. The kids aren't. That's the big thing that people are going to deal with.
My personal experience.
I know you are. I know you are.
Somebody get me. Somebody
think about. Complex. But what I think, and I think this is a big conversation we could have with David
right
on another show is around how does golf make themselves more prevalent in business. And in the way that people work moving forward, I think there are huge things there that golf could do to make those things easier and fit into people's daily lives.
Couldn't agree more. All right, Mike. So we're running out of time here and I apologize because I had something cool called the Stick and Hack Life FYI that is it was going to be a new segment on the show. But I'm going to hold it. For the next episode, just because I want to give it its due time and it was so great. We hung on longer than normal with him because he was so awesome. So I'm going to move past, but just be prepared for the Stick and Hack Life FYI designed to make you appear smarter coming up on the next show. Okay.
All right.
So we're going to move into the clubhouse and into the game here. It's called True or False. All right. Very simple.
Okay.
Very simple concept. Dude, should I explain it to you? Yes or no?
This is like truth or dare or just
no, it's true or false.
Just true or false.
I'm gonna name some facts.
All right.
And you're gonna tell me if they're true or false.
Sure.
Scotland's national animal is a unicorn.
False.
That's true.
How is that even possible?
I don't know. You tell me.
It's a mythical creature.
Right, and it's their national animal. Which, first of all, I didn't know there was a national. I know there's national birds and state birds, and all. I didn't know there was a national animal, and I specifically didn't know there was a national fake animal.
We're gonna have to talk to our boys Patty and Ian about that one.
That's right. Scotland's national animal is the unicorn. True, that's true. All right, there's a species of shark that has an average lifespan of 272 years. Some of them can even live as long as 500 years. True or false?
I'm gonna go with true on that one because I'm pretty sure sharks can live a long, long, long time.
Yeah. This specific species can live up to 500 years.
Wow.
Which is a long time.
Fascinating.
That is true. You're right. Honey never spoils. True or false?
That's true. I do know that one.
That's awesome.
I think probably because I probably have a bottle of honey sitting up on my shelf that's been there for the last 5 years.
Right. Maybe find a recipe to
take care
of.
Yeah.
No reason for honey to be around just because it can be around. Right. Question four, true or false. The idea of the Guinness Book of Records came to a guy by the name of Hugh Beaver in the 1950s when he had an argument in a pub about the fastest game bird in Europe, and he couldn't find any answers in any books, so he decided to compile a book of facts himself to help settle pub arguments. True or false?
False.
That is true. There are a lot more trees on Earth than there are stars in the galaxy.
False. There's no way.
True.
No. How is that? I don't even see how that's possible.
I'm just letting you know. This is what our Stick and Hack research team came up with. Yes, that's true. Are you seeing that? Are you seeing a trend here?
I think that's fake news.
Are you seeing a trend?
Yeah, I've seen a trend. I am.
What is the trend, Mike?
Everything's been true so far.
All right, last question here, true or false, on the Stick and Hack show. Adam is better looking than Mike.
That is way false.
That is true, unfortunately.
All right, can we get a poll on that?
We already did, and the answer is true.
Oh, okay.
Adam is better looking than Mike.
All right.
Comment below. That's Stick and Hack show, brought to you by Mike's Face. Apparently, second best looking thing here on the program. Dr. David Pierce, go to stickandhack.com and become a member of the greatest golf in the world without the course, and continued safety out there. If you are on the golf course, think of ways to make it better and let us know what that might be. Enjoy the week. Thanks, everybody.
See you guys. Peace out.
The Stick and Hack show is now over. Subscribe, rate, comment, and tell your friends. You are now free to go about your day.